We come this morning to the penultimate section of the Book of Acts that we've been working our way through for more than a year now. And in this section, Luke gives a very detailed account of their journey from Caesarea to Rome, a journey that's filled with lots of exciting adventure and also filled with very accurate detail as well that fully confirms that Luke not only was a member of the passenger list on these boats, but was also an accurate historian. If he, as a landlubber, as a seaman would call him, was able to give such an accurate account of this voyage, then we can certainly be assured that he's given an accurate account of the rest of the events that have been recorded in this book of Acts. Now, he covers some incidents here that are very similar to other incidents that have taken place in the life of the Apostle Paul. He talks about things and the providence of God in a way that basically repeats things that lessons he's already taught us in much greater detail. And yet this passage reconfirms and re-emphasizes an important lesson, and that is that God is in sovereign control of all the events in our lives. I'm reminded of many incidents through the history of the world, but one in particular that stood out for me as I was thinking about this was that of Adoniram Judson and his wife Anne, who were sent by churches in the United States of America to be missionaries in India. And they arrived in India and found that they couldn't be missionaries in India. They were not allowed to stay, to remain in India and serve the Lord there. After all their months of planning, their endless meetings for prayer and encouraging support for the work of the gospel in India, they couldn't work there. And yet in the providence of God, that journey was not a wasted journey. They ended up crossing the sea to what was then known as Burma and became pioneer missionaries of the gospel there in Burma and saw much fruit for their efforts in that land. In fact, the North Shore Church in Auckland has some links with some Burmese Christians living on the North Shore. One of the men in the North Shore Church runs a Bible study for them. And these Christians can trace their descent from the work of Adoniram and Anne Judson in Burma all those years ago. God was sovereignly at work, despite what seemed to be a hopeless situation. God was in the middle of it. God was working out his purposes. God had his plans, and nothing could stop them from being fulfilled. In fact, the apparent crisis that came into Adoniram Judson's life was actually the doorway opening up for greater work, for greater service. And things seemed to be completely outside the Apostle Paul's control here in this account, don't they? Everything is quite outside his control. Who would be in charge of him while he's a prisoner on this journey? Outside of his control. What ships they would sail on, the route that they would take, outside of his control. The weather that they would experience, and the people that they would meet, all outside of the Apostle Paul's control. And as we read this account, whether he will actually get to Rome at all seems to be completely outside of the Apostle Paul's control. And of course it is. None of this, these things that happen here, are things that Paul himself orders. They're not through his organizing, his administration, that these things happen the way that they happen. In fact, we see that his advice is ignored at one point. What he hopes will happen is not what happens. These things clearly are beyond Paul's control, but they're all under God's control. It's God who's working here. He's working out his purposes. He's already said to Paul when he was there imprisoned, he was told, "Be of good cheer, Paul, for as you have testified for me in Jerusalem, so you must also bear witness in Rome." Paul knows he's going to Rome, not because he can control the events that he's going through, but because God has told him he has a purpose for him in Rome, that he will preach the gospel there. And so we see how God in his sovereign care guards Paul from various situations that could lead to his destruction. The first thing that we see that God guards Paul from is abuse. In three separate incidents, Luke draws our attention to this fact. First of all, we see it in the way that God brings along a man who is sympathetic to Paul. Now, there's a couple of reasons for this. One is that Paul has appealed to Caesar. And if this centurion doesn't get Paul to Caesar, he might be in significant trouble. So that's one reason why this centurion is so interested in Paul and so caring of Paul. But it would seem as well, as the story unfolds in particular, that this centurion has become increasingly impressed by Paul's lifestyle, by his witness. Not necessarily by the words that he speaks, so much as by the way that he conducts himself in these adverse situations. Though it's interesting to note that throughout the New Testament, centurions in particular, among all the Romans, seem to have been most sympathetic to the gospel, most open to the gospel. We have accounts of Jesus speaking to centurions. We have accounts of the Apostle Peter dealing with the centurion, and also the Apostle Paul earlier in Acts, as well as on this occasion. Now, this centurion, he seems to be sympathetic to Paul. In verse 3 of chapter 27, we're told there that they landed in Sidon, and Julius, that's the centurion, treated Paul kindly and gave him liberty to go to his friends and receive care. Now, I'm not sure the commentators don't pick up on this, but it would seem that possibly Paul may be suffering some sickness at this point. The way that it's described that he received care from these friends would possibly suggest this fact, and that the centurion was sympathetic to Paul at this point because of his sickness, but also the fact that Luke is on this voyage. Luke, the beloved physician, as the apostle writes of him to the church in Colossae, he's there. Now, it would seem strange that Luke should be on board this vessel, as it travels with a cargo of wheat and grain to Rome and carrying prisoners. Why would Luke be there? How did he manage to twist his way on board and be a potential threat to helping Paul, his friend, escape from the boat? So possibly Paul is sick at this point, and Luke has gone along to take care of his physical sickness. Aristarchus, we're told, a Christian from Macedonia or from Thessalonica, he's on board ship as well. You'll remember Aristarchus was one of the people in Ephesus who were grabbed by the mob and taken to the theatre there. This is the same Aristarchus. Now, he's on board this vessel as well, but it's interesting to note that when Paul writes to the Colossians from Rome, very soon after arriving in Rome following this journey, Aristarchus is described there as being a prisoner with him. So, for some reason, is Aristarchus here also a prisoner? He's not like Luke going along as a companion to Paul, but he's actually one in chains as well. Well, it doesn't make it clear for us here, but it would seem possibly that Luke's presence is an indicator that Paul is sick at this point and in need of care. And Julius, also at the time that they arrive in Sidon, recognizes this fact and allows his friends there to care for him. As an aside, it's interesting that Paul has friends in Sidon. We're not ever told that he ever visited this place. Perhaps they're people that he has met in other cities during his missionary journeys. Or perhaps they're just brothers and sisters in the faith, people who have been converted. And there's a church perhaps there in Sidon who have heard of Paul's arrival and are keen to give him the help that he needs at this point. But whatever the realities of this situation, there is this fact that we know, that God brought Julius to such a point that Paul was cared for rather than abused in this situation. He could have been left chained up with the other prisoners, unable to meet with his friends, unable to be encouraged by them, or unable to minister to them. But even in this situation, Paul is given the care that he needs. And then later on, right at the end of that chapter, again Paul is guarded from abuse as the soldiers plan to execute all the prisoners, to kill them lest they should escape. And it would seem that even in the midst of these circumstances, even in the midst of a storm where it might be justifiable that prisoners be allowed to escape, well, even now these soldiers are very careful that they should not come under any criticism from the authorities in Rome, and they were prepared to kill their prisoners, execute them there, rather than be accused of allowing them to escape. But again, the sympathy of the centurion is in Paul's favour. He wants to save Paul. He wants to keep him safe. And so he spares all the prisoners for Paul's sake. And time again, we find this sort of thing happening both in the Bible history, but also in the history of the church, where we see God's gracious providence in saving his people brings salvation to many, many others also. And this is the case here. All the prisoners are spared because the centurion wants to spare Paul. And again, we find that Paul is guarded from abuse when he actually arrives in Rome, having progressed through all these various circumstances, made his way all the way to Rome. We find that there, as he had been in Caesarea, he is placed under house arrest. All the other prisoners are delivered by the centurion to the captain of the guard. But Paul, we're told, was permitted to dwell by himself with the soldier who guarded him. He's under house arrest once again. Once again, he's allowed to have visitors. He's allowed to have people come to him to care for him, and also that he may minister to them. And we'll note that next week as we look at the concluding portion of Acts chapter 28. So time and time again in this long journey, this arduous journey, we find that Paul is guarded by God from possible abuse. It would have been quite easy for Paul to have died from sickness, from being killed by the soldiers, from lack of proper care within his ailments. Paul may never have got to Rome, but God guarded Paul along the way. God guarded him from abuse. The second way that God guards him is, of course, the most obvious one, which is he guards him from natural disasters. And there are two main ones that we have presented to us by Luke here. One, of course, is the storm and the shipwreck. And even in the midst of this, Paul is saved. Paul is a bit concerned as they make their progress earlier on in the journey. He realizes that the time for bad weather is upon them. And he advises the centurion not to proceed with the journey, but to winter where they are. He perceives that a disaster is looming. Now, there's no indication here that this is by any divine prompting, but Paul, just from his own experience, from his knowledge of travel on the Mediterranean, he knows that the potential for serious loss of cargo and life is very real at this point. We're told that the fast has finished. That is, the Day of Atonement has already passed. The year is 59 AD, when the Day of Atonement fell fairly late. It fell on the 5th of October in that year. And the days for what they referred to as dangerous sailing lasted from the end of September through to the end of October, a period of roughly 6 weeks when sailing was permitted, but it was at great risk. And they were in the middle of that period of time at this point. Throughout November, December and January, no sailing took place on the Mediterranean because things were simply that serious for loss of life and possessions. And that's why later on we find that when the ship had been wrecked on Miletus, that they were there for 3 months. It was the 3 months when no sailing took place on the Mediterranean. And then in early February, they would have proceeded on their way to Rome. Paul here then argues for staying where they are, but the ship owner, the helmsman and the centurion all agree to try and get a little closer to Rome before they find a port to winter. And against Paul's advice, we find them continuing and ending up in this serious situation where they're being driven through the Adriatic Sea, that's the middle portion of the Mediterranean, and in danger of breaking up in the midst of the ocean before ever reaching any safe haven. And in the midst of all of this, Paul is being guarded by God. He is saved from the storm, not through the wisdom of the sailors, not through the ingenuity of the captain of the ship, not through the good planning and wise decisions of those who are in charge here, but he is saved by God. He is guarded by God throughout all of this. And that is, of course, where Paul draws his peace from. He knows that God has a plan for him. He knows that God has a purpose for him. God has promised that he will get to Rome. And even in the midst of these situations, this awful adventure that they're going through, Paul has this confidence. And he keeps, it seems to be, a very peaceful countenance in the midst of all of this. He continues to offer advice, despite the fact that he's been ignored in the past. And on the second occasion when he offers advice, he is able to say that, well, he's received this word from the Lord. God has spoken to him. He told them, you should have listened to me and not have sailed from Crete. Now, Paul isn't there saying, I told you so, in a sort of vain and proud way. Well, you should have listened to me. You know, I told you so the first time round. I don't believe that that's the kind of attitude that Paul has here. For one thing, he has never been that sort of a man. And for another thing, the whole story here indicates that Paul is in control of himself. He's not at the end of his wits, though all the others on the boat may be. Paul has kept his calm. What he's saying here, in effect, is, look, you didn't listen to me last time and looked what's happened. Make sure you listen to me now. I was right the last time. Consider that I may be right now. And he goes on to say, I urge you to take heart, for there will be no loss of life among you, but only of the ship. And then he goes on to speak about the vision that he saw of the angel of God who stood by him and spoke to him that he must appear before Caesar, and so on. And then this again works to his advantage later on when the soldiers are planning to kill the prisoners. Paul reminds the centurion, if there's any other loss of life, then all will be lost. Either all are saved or none are saved. And the truth of Paul's words and the wisdom of his advice earlier on is used to give him a hearing and a positive response later on. And this is all part of God's guarding and saving of Paul in these situations. And of course, the second natural disaster, if we can use that term for it, is when they are eventually on Malta, and Paul there helping to gather sticks for a fire to warm the wet, shivering sailors and prisoners and passengers from the boat, picks up a bunch of brushwood and throws it on the fire and is bitten by a poisonous snake. And there he is, shaking this snake off his hand into the fire, no doubt feeling the pain of the bite, even though the poison takes no effect on him. And the response of the islanders there indicate that this wasn't just any old snake, but it was a poisonous snake. They expected Paul to die initially when he doesn't. They think that, before he dies, they think that he must be a murderer, that he's been spared by the gods from the storm, but justice has caught up with him, and now the snake's got him. And then when he doesn't die, they believe he must be a god. But see in this, God's providence, God's guarding of Paul. It echoes, doesn't it, the account of the Great Commission as it's given at the end of Mark's Gospel. I know this portion is disputed by some scholars. Some have argued that it's been put in here because of what happened to Paul on Malta. Well, however you interpret it, there is this confirmation of the Mark passage where Jesus said that his followers would take up serpents and would not be hurt by them. They would drink something deadly and not be sick, and so on. Well, whether it's a confirmation of that Mark passage or not, it's a confirmation of God's care of his people and his ability to work all things in his own providence to fulfill his own purposes. And that's what is going on here. Paul is being guarded by God in the midst of these natural disasters that are coming upon him as he journeys from Caesarea to Rome. And throughout these things, Paul's trustworthiness as a witness for God is being sanctioned. And then the third way that God guards the Apostle Paul is from uselessness. It may be a small thing, but I think it's a significant thing. None of us likes to be useless. None of us likes to feel that we're impotent, that there's nothing that we can do in a situation, that we're just helpless victims, and that we're of no earthly use. None of us wants ever to be in that situation. And if anyone could have been, it would have been the Apostle Paul at this time. A prisoner, bound for Rome, having no authority. What could he do? What use could he be on this long voyage? And yet God guards Paul from uselessness. He's useful throughout the voyage in giving advice, in protecting the lives who sailed on this ship during this great disaster. It's through Paul's advice that these people are saved. Had Paul not been there, had Paul not spoken, it is very likely that every life would have been forfeit. Paul's useful in saving these people. But it's not just in terms of his advice concerning the ship and what to do at various points in the journey. But it seems that he's also been able to minister to people along the way. we can be fairly sure that when they stopped in Sidon, that it wasn't simply Paul receiving care, but that Paul ministered to his friends there in Sidon. We can be sure that when Paul eventually ended up on Malta, and when he was called a god there, we can be sure that he would have responded in a very similar way to the way that he had responded all those years earlier in Lystra, where he was also referred to as a god. And he tore his garments and begged with the people not to worship him and preached to them the gospel of Jesus Christ. Well, no doubt Paul did that there on Malta. He was able to heal the sick there. First of all, Publius, this leading citizen, a magistrate possibly, a principal person on the island, he was able to heal him, and then many others also were affected by Paul's ministry there on Malta. God guarded Paul from abuse. He guarded Paul from natural disasters. He guarded Paul from uselessness, even during these months of voyage and shipwreck and being held up on an island there in the Mediterranean. Now, what's the point in this? Well, of course, God is able to guard us as well, isn't he? The same God who was sovereign in all the events of Paul's life back there in AD 59 is the same God who's sovereign in all the events of our lives. And when we feel as though everything is outside of our control, that it's beyond our ability to turn things for good, God is working. When we feel as though we've come to the end of our tether, to the end of our resources, God's infinite giving is only begun, as the hymn writer put it. But we mustn't get the idea from this that we should expect everything to be plain sailing. Well, it wasn't for Paul here, was it? He was in the middle of a shipwreck. It wasn't plain sailing. On the other hand, things did go surprisingly smoothly for Paul. He had the trust of the centurion, who in every port that they stopped in gave him a certain amount of freedom, of liberty, to meet with his friends, to receive care, and so on. Paul wasn't manacled and chained in the deepest dungeon as he had been once in Philippi. Paul's shipwreck even brought him straight to a beach. He didn't on this occasion spend a night and a day in the deep, as he had done on another occasion. But we mustn't forget those other occasions. We mustn't forget the catalogue of events that Paul had endured that he wrote to the church in Philippi. All those horrendous things that he had gone through, the beatings, the scourgings, the stonings, the mockings, the imprisonments, the natural disasters, the peril from all kinds of danger that Paul had endured up to this point. It may seem that things are going reasonably smoothly considering all that's happening here for Paul. But it's not a message to us that we should expect things to be plain sailing. That we should expect freedom from sickness, freedom from poverty, freedom from abuse, freedom from the natural consequences of disaster, or even freedom from uselessness at times. God is certainly at work here. But the point is not that God guards his people in such a way that they're always prosperous, always healthy, always productive. No, God in this story is working out his purposes that he's been working out all the way through the book of Acts. He has a purpose for the gospel to be spread throughout the world. Part of that purpose is for Paul to get to Rome and to preach the gospel there. And in these circumstances, God is bringing Paul to Rome. He's not spared from harm, but God is fulfilling his purposes through these awful situations. And though Paul is spared a lot of anguish in this situation from what he's had before, it's still not plain sailing for him. And we shouldn't expect things to be all easy and comfortable for us in this life. God will guard us in every situation we find ourselves in. God is in control. We need never, ever doubt that for one moment. When we're suffering from ill health, when we're suffering the effects of natural disasters, when we're suffering from abuse, even in the midst of those situations, we can still have this confidence that God is guarding us. He's guiding us. He's protecting us because he is fulfilling his purposes in us and through us despite those things. And indeed, because of those things, they're all part of what God is using to bring about his purposes. Who knows how many people during the course of these events came to trust in the Lord Jesus Christ? Did this centurion perhaps come to faith in Christ through witnessing Paul's peace and calm in the midst of these situations? How many of the other passengers, the prisoners, the soldiers, the sailors, observed Paul, watched Paul, listened to Paul in these circumstances? How many of the people on the island of Malta heard the gospel for the first time and came to trust in the Lord Jesus Christ because Paul was shipwrecked on that island? How much encouragement was Paul able to give to Christians that he met after this event through a recounting of the experiences that he had gone through and the assurance that God had been in control then and he would be in control when his friends went through disaster and pain and trouble? And how much we can take encouragement from this, that Paul was guarded by God. And God guards us too. Paul wasn't guarded by God because he was some great apostle that could do great things for God that couldn't be done without him. God could have used anyone to fulfill his purposes, but he used Paul. God can use us. Whatever experiences we may go through, let's keep trusting the Lord and looking for every opportunity to be useful in the midst of the difficulties that we may be called upon to endure.